Earth and Sky.
Some people say it's inevitable that we're moving towards something called the singularity, you know, where the machine and the human are interconnected and interfacing. The machine is as conscious as the human. To me, that's a picture of hell.
That was Rosalind Byrne at the University of Virginia, and you're listening to Earth Skies, Clear Voices for Science podcast. Byrne was one of a panel of experts who probed nanotech issues in a Fred-friendly seminar series being broadcast on public television stations in 2008. The series title is Nanotechnology, the Power of Small. Earth Sky spoke with Rosalind Byrne about the ethical, cultural, and societal implications of nanotechnology. Do you think that nanotechnology will fundamentally change the human species into Homo Nano? And this is in the context of the panel discussion on life enhancement of nanotechnology, enabling people to possibly live hundreds of, 150, 200, who knows what the limit is. Tell me a little bit about this. What do you think will be the long-term effect of nanotechnology on our species?
All right, let me tell it this way. 2.5 years ago, I happened to be in New York City having a conversation with a Columbia nanoscale researcher as part of my research. And then after the day was over, I went back to my hotel and I went to sleep, you know, had my supper, had read, went to sleep. And for no reason I could explain, at about 1 a.m, I sat up in the bed in the middle of the night in this dark hotel room. And I thought, what am I doing awake? Because I'm not an insomniac. What am I doing awake? And I couldn't go back to sleep. So I turned on the light and I picked up a yellow lined pad of paper and a pen and just literally started writing. And I've never done this before, but I wrote until dawn. And then the next day when I was alert and awake, I took a look at what I'd written. And it was a science fiction short story suggesting that in the nano-enabled future, we will have the choice of living much longer. We will have systems embedded in our brain and bodies to monitor what's going on biologically, biochemically, and that we will be able to control the chemicals of the brain so that we can control moods. Well, that short story, over the course of 2.5 years, became a novel, which is now with an agent being, you know, tightened up to go be shopped for a publisher. But I think the reason why I sat up in the middle of the night is because, in fact, at some subconscious level, having spent the day at this university talking to researchers, I thought, oh my God. And so, not knowing really quite how else to express the oh my God, it came out through literature, through fiction. And the tension for me is that we are not asking along the way, where are we going and what are we doing? It's as if we're caught up in a wave and we're just riding it. And I think when the wave settles down again and the water recedes and we stand up and look around, we will not be recognizable in terms of who we are now. And I think part of that not recognizable will have to do not with everyone, because this is very much an issue of class, but for those who have the resources, intellectual, financial, otherwise, there will be a group of people who will choose, because we have the technology, to enhance their physical bodies, to enhance their senses and various properties. I don't think that will be without a trade-off. One of the scientists I spoke with in my research said, in fact, he doesn't worry about such things because he thinks it takes an awfully long time for changes such as this to come. But that what he is concerned about is anything that will take us into no longer communicating with one another directly, body to body, eye to eye, species to species, because the technology will, in fact, have replaced some of those modes of communication. I also worry about that. Now, whether or not it's a good thing that we'll move in that direction, you know, is that's for society to decide. But from where I stand now and what I value in being human, I think we have a great deal to lose in the exchange. One thing I worry about is that the rapid development of some of these technologies takes us back from that connection to that organic whole, which is the human experience and the animal kingdom that we're a part of in the earth, disconnects us from that. And I don't think we know what that means. I think we've already taken steps out of that connection, and we will take leaps that will redefine what it means to be Homo sapien.
You know, that's very interesting because in talking to some scientists about nanotechnology, some of them have told Earth and Sky that they're trying to mimic nature. They're trying to do what nature does. It's just at a really tiny scale. But there's nothing really unnatural about it. They're really trying to get what they're doing, engineering, just like nature does. So tell me a little bit about this sense that you have that that this technology, nanotechnology, that it's developing possibly not in our own interests.
Well, okay, we'll step back for a moment. This inspiration from nature is a wonderful thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Even the mimicry of nature, in theory, there's nothing wrong with that. Depending on where it comes from. Now, to be inspired by nature and mimic some of nature's processes in order to solve problems is one thing. To mimic nature because we are interested in somehow conquering nature or recreating nature in our own image, that's a little bit sobering to me. We don't have the intelligence for that. We're not giving it enough time. We don't really understand what that means. As I said, nature has had millions of years to take it slowly and evolve through of what appears to be somewhat intelligence, to the extent that evolution is careful to do what it needs to do for sake of sophisticated development and survival. We're driven by other kinds of mechanisms such as profit, pride, competition, which I think interfere in what might be a more organic, careful, conscientious process of discovery. That's where I'm concerned. It's the human hubris that worries me. And the sense that we are separate from nature and I've heard people, in fact, people in Washington, talk about wanting to manipulate and control matter with precision as if it is somehow something that could take us down, something that we're competing against, something that we need to gain control over. And I think, you know, part of the reason we are in such trouble in terms of some of the issues going on the planet is because of that very attitude. Now, if we're going to take that attitude that we've exhibited on the macro scale and micro scale down to the micro scale, we are really treading on very, very dangerous soils, is my feeling. Just the fact that we are now coming to terms with what it means, this so-called carbon footprint, you know, where did that come from? Why is that any different than what we're doing with individual molecules in trying to sort of reconstruct things to suit ourselves? Now, we can reconstruct things to suit ourselves when, in fact, we're doing it with some kind of recognition of the mastery of nature and some kind of respect for that. But when we do it out of hubris or out of a desire to be in control, then we're in trouble. Now, I'm all for curing cancer. It's a horrible disease. We probably caused it by our own behavior to some extent. So we probably need to figure that out and work on it. But part of what we need to do is understand where we went wrong, acknowledge it, and perhaps make different choices in how we live. We don't just throw new technologies at bad choices and expect those bad choices to go away. So in addition to mimicking nature, I would like to, which is a can be a beautiful, inspired thing, I would like to see us also ask tough questions of ourselves about what we are doing and why, what we have done and why, and what we might not need to do differently if we're to mature a little bit more as a species.
That was Rosalind Byrne at the University of Virginia. She's an associate professor in the Department of Science, Technology, and Society. This special Clear Voices for Science podcast was produced in cooperation with ICANN Productions and the Fred Friendly Seminars, with funding from the Department of Energy and the National Science Foundation. Go to powerofsmall.org to find out more. I'm Jorge Salazar, and this is Earth Skies Clear Voices for Science podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.